Hello and welcome to Digital Logic PC Gaming Podcast with Ender's Logic, Flopsy, and your host, Robert Digital. Now turn your game volume down, your earbuds up, and fucking enjoy.
Now let's get some business out of the way. We had an interview with...
Yeah, a good interview.
Yeah, well, fuck, I am garbage in the morning. It was 9 a.m. for us because he's in
London. Why do you make excuses every interview?
Well, I'm either drunk or sleepy or, you know, something's up. I'm very rarely at my desk.
Why don't we tell him who the interview was with?
Tom LeBert?
Tom Joubert.
Joubert.
Not Joubert. Joubert.
I said, that's how we started. I was like, hey, so here we are with an interview with Tom Joubert, and Chad's like,
stop.
So right, I don't even know if that made the cut. Did that make
was,
the cut?
No, that's not in there. There were a lot of good things that I cut out of that. That was hilarious. Let's recap.
First,
Emilio thought The Swapper was a movie that he wrote.
Yeah. Since when are games on IMDb? How long has that been happening?
Ever since, like,
IMDb
voiceovers have started becoming a popular
thing. I mean, the best part about that was, as you say, so you, like, awkwardly brought up that he had written for a movie called The Swapper, and he was like, you could tell he was really trying to be polite and awkward to correct you. He was like, awkward pause.
He was very polite.
Well, as the British are.
Yeah.
But they have this.
But, yeah, he's the...
He's the writer of The Talos Principle, The Swapper... not the movie. That's later coming out. FTL, like all of those games are legit as fuck. Yeah. So if you haven't played them, get out there.
And he was a smart guy. Like,
yeah.
You could tell.
Yeah. As you would expect from, you know, those games and, so as soon as I heard that, they all have one common, right here on the podcast. And then that's the great thing about the internet is like, I made this connection, that everybody else had already made, and then I was like, oh, let me reach out, and then, you know, 1 week later there it is. So thank you very much, Tom. We're gonna put that at the end of the podcast, and also we got to get to our review giveaways. Again, just recapping again, if you leave a review on iTunes and write a review, you are forever entered into these contests. We've given away over $250 or something.
Probably still.
Last week was
Laquita.
The winner was Laquita. No,
yeah, Laquita Lizda.
Yeah, Laquita Lizda. That's one word though. And so there's no Steam name in there, so I don't know who you are. I've been trying to find you. If you still listen to the podcast, which I'm sure you do, email me at emilio@dlgaming.net. This week's winner. Congratulations. And you guys are going to think this is so I'm trying to promote you. No, the last person to write a review actually won. That was X-Flat Picker. Thank you for the review. And I will be sending you your code because I know you're active on Steam. I know who you are. So I'll be sending you your code probably tonight or tomorrow.
Cool. Congratulations, guys.
Yeah, congratulations.
And we're doing another one this week?
We're doing another. No, that's this week's.
Okay,
There will be one the following week and then one after that. So you have plenty of time to go write a review. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And let's get into the big story.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep.
So I played Star Citizen. Bob, I want to see...
Well...
I want to hear your experience before I get fucking super mad.
This is not... What is it called?
Arena Commander.
Arena Commander.
Arena Commander,
so
yes.
Very limited.
Yeah, which took me a while.
The demo, that's 20 gigs. The game's going to be 100.
Well, it is running on the CryEngine, so come on, give it a break. But first of all, shout out. Someone in the Steam group brought this to our attention.
Yeah, LabMonkey.
Yeah, LabMonkey. So
LabMonkey's just
for,
part of the crew at this point.
Yeah,
I talk to him several times a week. Like,
he's our correspondent out there in Texas.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I jumped on that. I, too, was surprised at the size of that. I don't have much hard drive space to spare, so I was like, damn, 20 gigs, this better be good. It took me a little while to figure out what the hell you were supposed to do. I was wandering around the
hangar
for a while. I was getting a nice tour of the ships, and get a nice feel for the game. I mean, the attention to detail, it's on the CryEngine, so it looks beautiful. There's no graphics options. You have, you set your resolution, and then there's like medium, high, very high, and that's it.
Those are options?
Those are two options. Okay. You know, usually your graphics has like 20. Right. But I get it. This isn't the final game.
It's still in beta.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not criticizing.
Yeah, it's a little clunky, but yeah, whatever.
But I mean, it's the CryEngine, so everything feels real. Even just running around, I'm like, I feel like a person running around this environment. Everything was very realistic. I walked into the ships. I looked around. Oh, cool! It looked like a like an RV almost. The ships. They had a little toilet in there. You could open up a bed. You could lay down in. I'm like, I could see someone getting very attached there. Ship, you know, that feeling of ownership. And then I was like, there's got to be more than this. I can't bring up any sort of inventory or do anything. I can jump, that's about it. And then I, after a little bit of Googling, I figured out, okay, you go into Arena Commander, you can run a few demos.
You Google better than I do. It did not work for me. Like,
you didn't get into Arena Commander?
I did.
Oh, okay.
But only after talking to Lab Monkey, who he, you know, he's a I'm pretty sure he's a backer. He's had
what do they call their backers? They call it a, they have a name for it.
Space Cadets.
Space Cadets?
Oh, that's a guess.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not it. Stupid. I was going to politely not correct you, like Tom Joubert did.
And they pay, they back it with space bucks.
Yeah. That is their currency. But there were several of those demos you could run in Arena Commander. Which one did you do?
I did them all.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Except, wait, there's one that was online, right? That you could play online.
Where you play against other people?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't do that one. I just did the one versus drones.
Yeah, I did drones, I did free flight, and I did the race. Mm-hmm. The race, so what'd you think of the field? Well, hold on, let me fucking vent really quick. I couldn't even get in my ship. Like, I couldn't get in the ship. How long did it take you to figure out that F was the key to get in the ship?
Well, F is a standard use key. It's either E or F.
Yeah.
On old games, it's spacebar. But, you know, I walked around, and they don't show you anything. It kind of makes it more cinematic. There's no health bar or HUD or anything like that. Yeah. But when I got close, I saw a little icon that said use. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how you open stuff.
No, not me. Not this guy. I pushed every button but F. Turned my cap lock off. All kinds of stuff. Anyway. But then, that main ship, the one that you spawn right next to, there's that really big one, it's probably half the size of another Millennium Falcon. I'm thinking the whole time, once you get in...
That's a standard measurement, by the way, Millennium Falcon?
Yeah, because everyone knows how big that is.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Or three Jaws long. Jaws the shark?
Oh, Jaws. Yeah, gotcha.
Three Jaws.
Three Jaws. That.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, three Jaws.
Gotcha. Standard. Come on, man.
Banana for scale.
No. Okay. So anyway, I'm trying to get... Did you get into that ship? The one that's by itself in the center hangar.
I don't think so.
It was very hard. So I'm convinced that I'm going to fly one of these ships into the demo.
Yeah.
Convinced. So I go into the other ships. I check them out like you did. And I get into them and all that. But I'm convinced that this center one, since it was by itself... And you spawn right behind it. It's got to be the only one that you can fly.
Yeah, the one you're supposed to get into.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm jumping all over it, pushing F all over it, running around. Finally, I talked to Lab Monkey. I was like, dude, what the fuck? And actually, what happened before that is I found one single red button on the back right landing gear that opens the cargo bay that you can get in. And then there's another, once you get in there, there's another door. You have to hit another button. And then you finally get into the ship proper, or the cockpit.
Yeah.
And then I was very, after I don't know, 10 minutes of trying to get in the ship, that's it. It was probably like 2 minutes. But once I got in, I'm thinking, here we go, for sure, here's the demo.
Here's
no.
The go.
So then that's when I talked to Lab Monkey, and he's like, his first response was ROFL. What he goes, you have to push escape. And so my girl was watching and she saw all the frustration. And then
he comes out of his room like twice.
I was like, Chad, come in here.
What the fuck is going on?
Yeah. so then, yeah, you have to push escape and go into a simulated flight.
Gotcha. Yeah. But then when you go into that, you're in space already, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to,
yeah, they send you right out there.
Okay.
And
how was the actual flight?
Very, there's a lot of immersion for me. I felt, I was tilting my head a little bit you know?
It's going to be even crazier with the Oculus.
Yeah.
This is a perfect game. It's a perfect game. Virtual reality. And you would probably need a joystick for this, a flight stick.
Yeah. The,
you could have borrowed mine.
No, you know what? I felt fine. Like, this is the first time I've ever seen anything where you can vertically strafe. So you can strafe left to right, or you can strafe up and down. I've never seen that
Elite
before.
Elite Dangerous has that.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. The fidelity's really low. I went really close to some asteroids, shot them, didn't see any damage on them. But this is early. So, gotcha. Anything that I shot basically didn't have any damage on it, except for other ships when you fight the drones. But I really doubt that that's going to be permanent. So,
was the fighting as difficult as Elite Dangerous?
Not as, but it's the same kind of thing, you know?
Okay.
You can tell where they are by that funky little map.
Yeah.
But I found it way easier. But then there were drones too, so maybe they're supposed to be easy. I got to say the immersion quality is very, very high. Like you said, getting into the cockpit almost looks like getting into a cockpit. Like,
yeah, I saw you get into one.
Yeah, you black out. You black out really easily.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If you pull G's, you black out quick. And you're constantly fighting. That's where the difficulty comes in. Because, you know, when somebody flies by you, you turn very quickly. And you can see the edges of the screen go gray. Oh. And the blackness starts to close in. And you need to pull off from that turn. And you'll be okay. But it happens a lot. It's a constant struggle not to black out. And if you do black out, you just kind of go to sleep, and then you wake up looking at your knees, and you kind of shake your head, and then you get back in the fight. Yeah.
There's a level of realism to this game. I can tell already just from the short amount that I've played of this demo, but there's a level of realism that I just haven't seen anything do. I mean, it's almost like DayZ, where it's just everything is so... You have to work for everything. It's not even like a movie where there's cuts. It's just completely uncut. Like getting into the ship, you crawl into the ship. You're watching, you know, it's a first-person point of view, but you're watching your arms and your legs move to get into that position. And it takes a little while.
I can, like you said before, I can really see somebody loving their ship as they love their car.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Well, they're selling them for hundreds of dollars, some of these ships. So they better love it.
So are you guys back excited on Star Citizen? Because you had said a couple weeks ago you were kind of over it.
I just don't like flying much.
It's not really my thing. That's the thing. They are claiming to be able to do so much, and if they pull that off, I'll be excited about it. I'm not really into space or flight sims.
Dogfighting?
Yeah, and dogfighting, like, that is not at all what I would play this game for. But a lot of the other stuff they had talked about, then I would definitely do. And, I mean, we'll see if they deliver on that.
I'm interested in FPS. Like, if I do really well in the FPS, can I gain money and buy a cool ship and then go be a jackass in it and not really fly, you know?
Probably.
Not do all the money and stuff. Like, that's what I would be excited for. Maybe play the first-person shooter, or maybe even commerce. Maybe even, like, you know.
Yeah, if they had some sort of quests or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's, like, you can be a trader or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. So... All in all, a good experience.
All in all, a good experience, except for hold my hand a little bit. Cause,
yeah, there was no tutorial or anything.
Yeah, there's some retards, a.k.a. me.
I mean, it's like DayZ in the fact that it doesn't hold your hand. I hate to keep comparing it to that, but I mean, my experience wasn't as bad as yours, but I walked around, I'm like, this is not like a video game. There's nothing indicating where I need to go and what I need to do. If I get close to something, there's no just like press a key and then you enter it. You know, like if you reach a certain proximity to a ship, you just, like, one of the ships I got into, I literally had to crawl underneath because that's how you enter. Yeah, I had to duck down, go underneath, and then get back into it. And I crawled up into a tiny hole, and then I had to press the use key again to actually get inside of the ship. So it's like, you know, every little detail is thought out like that. So that's probably one of the reasons it's taken them to produce this game. Or it's taken so long to create this game. It's just because they're trying to do so much with it.
Did you go up in the rafters?
I took the elevator up, wandered around there. I jumped off of those, no fall damage. I thought that was a little weird, but...
I tried to fall off. I couldn't do it. Anything else on Star Citizen?
Nope.
It's really pretty.
Scroll down.
I told somebody, I've seen a lot of rocks in a lot of games. These are the best rocks I've ever seen in a game. Just those asteroids look really, really nice. And you're just kind of flying around this like mining operation. They're actively mining the planet from space. So it's really pretty looking. Hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
All right, let's move on.
I guess I'll jump into something. I played a couple games today, this week, I mean. One of the games I played was actually the beta of Triad Wars. Lab Monkey, shout out again, Lab Monkey, posted up on our forum that, that you could get access to it if I follow the link. But I caught onto his game.
Lab?
Yeah. I got in there and I realized that he gets money. You know, he gets
motherfucker.
He gets in-game money. No disrespect, he did it the right way. But I was like, okay, I get you now, Lab. I'm on to you.
He's on the pyramid skin.
Yeah. Well, a lot of games have a recruitment system like that.
So I'm all for it. I actually, it's still in beta.
Speaking of which, if you want to play Smite, just message me and then I will get you that game for free.
You don't play Smite anymore.
Yeah, but I want gems. All day, every day.
Still want gems, even though you don't play. So, free to play. Still in beta. People are trying to call it like an online Sleeping Dogs, but I didn't think it was like that. People are calling it like GTA 5.
Wait, did you play Sleeping Dogs?
A little bit.
Which is GTA 5.
Yeah.
Right?
It's more similar to, what was that Epic Quest for loot or whatever?
Epic Quest?
Yeah, you guys played that. I didn't play that one.
What was that called?
Epic Quest for Mighty Loot or Mighty...
Yeah, something. Nice. Mighty, yes.
Mighty Quest for Epic Loot or something.
Mighty was in the title.
Yeah. Yes. So basically, you are in one of the three triads, and you start off as kind of a low man, and you're trying to build up your base of operations. So you have a base, and you can build it up. But then you have this kind of area that you can go and explore. But in there, there's kind of five or six other people's bases. And you can go and raid theirs. And if you raid theirs, you can steal their money and loot or whatever. So it's similar to that.
How much strategy is there in the defense of your base?
Not a whole lot.
Okay.
Actually, none.
So what? So what are you expecting that you're hoping that the other players aren't very
good? So the way this game works is there's these favors that you can get, and you can get them in various ways. They've got little side quests that you can get, or you can kill a group of guys and pick it up off their body. But they've got all these favors. Like, you can get a weapon bonus for 30 minutes, or you can get a defense bonus for 24 hours. You know, so you can get all these favors and utilize them as you want to use them. So that's kind of the game is... You go and collect these favors, and then you use these favors to help you defend your base or to help you attack other people's bases and stuff like that.
Huh.
So it's kind of got three different elements. You kind of are building your own base, and it's a little bit of Clash Clans where it's got like timers ticking to get your.
Do you assume this is going to be free to play then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so. So you get your loot out of there, out of your timers that are ticking down on your base, and then you can go out and explore in the city and do stuff in the city there. And then the third thing is invading other people's bases.
And the reason you get into all the details is you actually like this game.
Yeah, I was having fun. It's in beta, so there's things I don't like. The main thing I don't like is there's only basically one style of base. So every time you raid a base, the placement's a little bit different. Some guys have different weapons and stuff like that, but it's essentially the same thing.
I really like these pseudo online games.
Yeah.
Where, like, you could just...
Asynchronous online.
Yeah, you kind of just invade their presence.
Exactly.
Whether they're there or not,
yeah.
Which is really cool. But hopefully they build up on the base building, because that, for me, Mighty Quest for Epic Loot, that was the part... I really liked
forming building the your dungeon own base, right?
And seeing if I could kill anybody. I only got like a maybe 10-20% kill ratio, but I mean that was fun.
Yeah,
you know, if I could, throw a bunch of monsters at them, have fun. I want to play that game again.
I really like the kind of the world this is in. This is in modern day Hong Kong style, but it's kind of seedy a little bit. But then you see these really nice cars. It's kind of like this.
It's a sexy little town. I said, it's like it looks like a futuristic, but. It's now kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. The city had it really cool. I just watched you play for a little bit. I was impressed with all the different attack animations I saw in that short amount of time.
Oh, for sure. And you, like, if there's a table nearby, he'll like throw your the guy's head onto the table, and you can actually interact a little bit with the environment.
And meanwhile, it's all just left click, yeah?
It was tap, left click, hold left click, and then right click to parry.
Oh, so there's a little bit too.
Yeah, and there's guns too, and they've got this vault mechanic where if you got your gun out and you vault over an object, it slows down time briefly.
Yeah.
So you can like pick people off while you're vaulting. It was cool. I'm enjoying it.
You're gonna complain?
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit, yeah. Cool.
That was Triad Wars. Just
Triad Wars. Yep. Now I played Dirty Bomb. Bobby or Chad, did you?
I downloaded it.
But that's it.
I was going to play it and never got around
to it. Okay, so what game were you playing that you said that you get these cards?
That was Bobby played
it. Oh, you played it. Okay, you did talk it. Yeah. It's been coming up a lot on my my research. PC Gamer just did a piece on it, and I saw a couple tweets about it. So I'm like, oh, maybe it's better now, or maybe, you know. So I jumped into it. It's a class-based first-person shooter. The classes are kind of like... no, I would say character-based. This is the first of these ability shooters that we've been talking about. That's basically what it is. You only get two abilities. They range quite a bit. And the way they put diversity is, you get these cards and these drops. And the drops weren't rare. But you can pay for the drops if you want. You get a suitcase, you open the suitcase, you can get a card, blah, blah, blah. I actually got a lot at the beginning. It didn't seem to trail off either. Like, I was constantly getting boxes. And then you get this card, and this card could have an upgrade. But you don't really need them. It's very small things that you can get. I didn't feel that the balancing was too off because of the cards. The balancing was off because there's, like, there's a couple things. There's a guy that goes invis that's really strong. Chad, you really hate that so much.
Invisibility.
I don't know if it's... But I played this solid for like 6 to 8 hours, I think. The other thing was, there's a spammer. There's a demo man, if you will, for GF2. And she just light up a whole area. And since it's a capture point game, you just own. I played it and played it and played it. And it was, you know, I like most things. And I like this game. It's not a bad game. But TF2 is just better in pretty much almost every way. Except for I really like, you know, abilities and timers on abilities. And the stronger the ability is, the longer the timer is.
Yeah.
So I really like all that. But do you guys think that TF2 could use abilities?
I don't think they need to change TF2 any more than they've already done.
Yeah. So
if they come out with a TF3, though, it probably will be.
just start a new IP. I mean, don't even mess with the Team Fortress name. Leave that alone. Make something new if you want.
Well, listen, Dirty Bomb is free to play. There's no reason not to download it. Try it. It's definitely worth a few games. You might really enjoy it. Some people really enjoy it. I really made a goal of getting 50,000 credits so that I could unlock the guy with the sentry gun, because it's kind of my jam. But I got to the point where I was getting credits way too slow, and that's pretty much it. Like, I never bought anything in the game. So, and then I started playing TF2 again. So, Bob, talking about TF2, have you actually played the Gunmetal update?
Yeah, I bought the Gunmetal update. Nice. So I started playing that. And I got mixed feelings about it. I love the new content. I love the maps. The maps are great. These are like official Valve maps that they come out with.
Did you like the Japanese one?
Yeah, that's my favorite
one.
It's
pretty, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's something new.
Yeah.
I feel like I shouldn't give them too much credit for making new maps, because a TF2 map, you really only have to make half of it, because you just mirror that half on the other one, and that's it.
So. Well, and they're also community created, actually. I don't know if you noticed that all three of those are community created.
They list who like created them, but they're all like released through Valve and have Valve's blessing on
it. And do you know about the post stamps or whatever? Have you ever bought a post stamp or whatever that's called?
No.
So if you play a game enough, you can kind of tip the guy who made the map.
Oh, gotcha.
So I have no interest in this. Whatever. I play blah, blah, blah. So I bought the Gunmetal update, and it says to me, It goes, hey, you actually played 7 hours on this one map made by this guy. You want to tip him 99 cents? I was like, fuck yeah, seven hours yeah. I've been on it. Yeah, fuck yeah. And I like that map. I just, you know, I bought the stamp. It's 99 cents. But, like, if everybody did this, you know, map creators can make a living making maps, you know? I thought it was really cool that it told me, hey, this is what you've done. Maybe reciprocate. And I gladly did. Yeah. I thought it was really cool.
So you're a little weird when it comes to giving money to the video games. Like, you refuse to get the God Pack for Smite while playing it for hours on end.
But I've given them so much money on skin stuff. So
I don't know. It's just...
There's no reason. There's no reason for me to get it. I always earn my... I was always like, you know, maybe half a week behind.
Well, they set a price. They say, you know, you can pay this or you can play this. And Smite, that case is, how much is it to unlock a God?
Yeah.
Like, how much? I can't remember.
I always wait the second week because it drops down half price.
Well, like it's the same thing with any MOBA, but like with Heroes of the Storm, you know, they have some ranging from like 2,000 to 10,000 gold. So, you know, you can either spend the time playing and earn that amount. And, you know, I think that's just as valuable to them than if you actually spend money on it.
What do you think changes the price on a god? Like you said, 2 to 10. Popularity?
How new it is.
The newer ones. How hard it is to create, probably, too.
Yeah, some of the more advanced, difficult to play ones are usually more expensive. I don't know. And then they probably just do that shit just to make scarcity.
Yeah.
But anyway, TF2, Gunmetal. I don't think I like the quests so much.
Wow,
I mean, that's...
I love it.
Kind of what I hate about games is like when they just give you these arbitrary quests that cause you to play the game in inorganic ways. It's so, I mean, what you have to do is you get a quest to earn points as like a scout on this map. And so what you end up seeing is just a lot of people playing one type of class, trying to do certain things rather than just playing the game. And
see, I didn't see a lot of that. It really seemed like a normal games to me.
Well, a lot of games are pretty messy like that, too. But I see that all the time. Like, I'll go into a server, and there's, like, 3 scouts, 4 snipers, no heavies, no meta hits.
Well, that's normal, right?
It's usually not that bad. It's not that bad. I've noticed it's a little worse on these ones, which is a shame, because I feel like these maps are really good, and I really want to, like, experience them, like, in an actual game and not just people trying to farm achievements.
Right.
So I don't really like that point. The skins that you can win for your weapons... you have a very slim chance of getting the cool ones that they showed off in the advertisement. All the ones I've gotten so far are just really dull. I mean, you couldn't even really tell if someone was holding one. It's really not that great. The cases that they give you, I've been selling those. I spent $6 on this. I've been selling every case that I got because I'm not going to buy a key for $2.50 and unlock it. But I've sold these cases and I've already made like $1.35, $1.50. So, I mean, by the time this thing is up, I'll probably more than have made my money back on it. So that's pretty cool. I mean, going for like 28 cents, 15 cents a piece. But yeah, I love the content. I think the skins are cool, but I still don't quite understand if you can repair. Like, they have grades of them, which I think Counter-Strike does, where you have, like, factory new down to well-worn. And the well-worn ones do not look as good. Like, if you have an electricity pattern on it, then you aren't going to see it as much on a well-worn one. A factory new one's going to look bright and shiny.
It's like a car. Like, the paint starts to oxidize and just.
So these ones are going for a lot more. Like, a factory new rare... weapon with the skin, it's going to go for like $20-25 on the Steam market. The cheap ones, like the well-worn ones, are going for like 7 cents.
I have a factory new weapon. I'm totally going to sell that.
Well, you got to see if it's a rare one, though, because there's different grades of rarity. And yeah, chance, unless it looks like, you'd know if it was a rare one. Mm. But yeah, I do like, I really like these maps. I mean, I've been having a lot of fun playing these.
But you think you would have been able to play those maps without buying the Gunmetal?
Okay. Yeah, you can.
So do you feel like you wasted your money?
Because I'm going to get it all back in cases anyway.
Yeah, but that requires effort. I feel like we're at two ends of this. I really enjoyed those little quests. Did you get the 30%, 30 more points per quest?
I did some of them. Yeah. That helps you level up your coin faster, and I'm not really sure what the advantage of that is. Once you buy into the Gunmetal deal, you get a coin. And then as you earn points by completing these quests, your coin goes from bronze to silver to gold. And I don't even know what really that does. So
well, no, I'm not I imagine at the very least, you have this coin right next to your name, and then it shows maybe that's it.
What if it was just on the scoreboard, it shows that. And it's also an item in your inventory, so maybe it helps with other things.
Yeah.
But I have been playing, now that I've been playing a lot more TF2, I started fooling around with a sniper, and I never play sniper.
That's what I'm saying, man. Did you do that through the Gunmetal update?
Because yeah, I did it because I got a quest. Got a quest.
That's what I'm saying. It makes you play these things that you wouldn't use.
Yeah, but I could
play them in a way that you maybe.
But I really have no business playing sniper. That's getting rid of my team. But I'll tell you what I started doing on sniper is using the Huntsman, which is a bow and arrow.
Bow and arrow.
Which is a new item they introduced like years ago. But when it came out, it was really when they started adding a lot of new guns to TF2 and kind of changing up the classes. And they had upgrades, like each class would get an upgrade. And I think the sniper was one of the first ones, and he got the Huntsman. And that thing is fun, man. You really feel like an archer just trying to, like, headshot people with that. And there's even, you know, if you get someone next to a wall, they'll stick to the wall, which this I thought was a cool
sweet,
little
right?
Yeah, cool little deal.
It's not that weapon, for me, I don't even aim. I just shoot it where I think people will be.
Yeah.
And that's how usually it works.
There's a little bit of time for that arrow to travel.
Yeah.
And also, the reason why I really like it is because you don't get that tunnel vision. When you're looking down the scope of your typical sniper rifle, there's a lot that you don't see. And I really hate that. And then waiting for the thing to charge. I like the archer, you play a little closer, a little less proximity. And, you know, even if someone rushes you, you got a good chance of getting them in the head with that thing if you just let one fly real quick.
Oh, the hitbox for the head on the on that is much larger than on the guns.
Mm-hmm.
You need a little leeway. You have a bow and arrow. You brought a bow and arrow to a gunfight. So.
Yeah, but TF2 is always good. We really got to do some Man vs. Machine, though.
Yeah, I'm down.
I'm down tonight. I always say that, and then nothing ever happens.
Yeah. All right, what else have we been playing? I played some more games. Is it my turn to talk? What should I talk about? Supernova. This was a game that Amino told me to take a look at. It's in beta right now. Free-to-play MOBA.
By Bandai.
Namco Bandai.
Namco Bandai. They specialize in robots.
Yeah. That's the publisher, the developer. I forget who the developer is.
Okay.
But, so, it's a futuristic one with, like, mechs and aliens and stuff like that. Pretty standard fare. It reminded me a little bit of the DC one because it's more left to right. It's
right,
left to right instead of top down. Meaning, like, the lanes are pushing right to left.
Diagonally.
As opposed to kind of diagonally. Okay. And that's similar to how DC was set up. Mm-hmm. And it had kind of had the same sort of venting thing where the pushes in DC was the kind of smoke or whatever. Remember that? So I brought up a lot of similarities. Pretty standard. They do everything fine. Like, there's nothing that they do poorly.
Yeah.
But
nothing they do great either.
Exactly. It's what's drawing me in. The only thing that I did think was cool is
fucking robots, bro.
They did well. They did a couple things differently. When you're in your picking stage, the scoreboard actually has you in a lane, so you can ask to swap lanes with people.
Mm.
So like
it assigns you.
It assigns you a lane. So you should follow
my class.
No. They just put you into a lane slot, and then you pick your character. So I thought that was kind of interesting, but they do that for a reason. Because when you get in there, you actually have to create your creep wave. So part of like the strategy is using your points to assign your creep wave.
In-game or pre-game?
No, in-game.
Hmm.
So you start off with like a certain amount of points, and you have to like assign, okay, I'm going to do two of the infantry and one of the rocket launch.
So you have XP points, you have gold, and then you have...
You don't have gold in this. You don't buy items. You have kind of your XP in two different ways. So you get these, there's about eight different stats that when you, as you're leveling up, you get these points that you can put into eight different stats.
Okay.
So weapon damage, attack speed, health, armor, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And then you've got these big points, which I think, I don't know how often you get them, but they're kind of like items, meaning it'll be it'll say 20 weapon damage and 40% armor penetration or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they're like big items, and you can get up to 3 points in each of those, and you can, I forget how many you go down. I think you can get 5 of those. And that's where they've got your core and then your offense and your defense and stuff.
Okay.
So
I still don't understand where you're getting the points for your minions. Is that a separate currency altogether?
Yeah, it's a separate
currency. How you get that, just like you get all the other ones?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Basically, that would be the equivalent of gold.
As if we needed another fucking thing to manage, though.
But you're not really managing items in this game. So it's kind of the trade-off.
Okay.
But what's interesting is some...
Do they come out looking different?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, so...
But your creep wave... Like, your individual guys have bonuses and drawbacks versus other ones. So you can actually look at how your creep wave is doing against the other one, and you can change your creep wave to try to compensate for what they're pulling out of.
Yeah. That's cool.
But that's why they have
that's
to assign
idea,
you a,
I like it.
That's why they have to assign you a lane, because you could be jumping all over the map, but you're still controlling the creeps
right.
from your assigned lane.
I see.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm looking at Bobby, and he's just like, this is so not Heroes of the Storm.
Yeah.
Like the whole time,
yeah.
he's like, what?
Yeah, it could be interesting.
So, I thought that was really cool. I did...
If they were dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Now that...
If they were dinosaurs.
Now you're talking.
Okay, I'm listening.
What's this game called again?
This is Supernova.
Supernova.
Free to
is this
play.
A podcast? Are we what's going on here?
Yeah.
Sorry, I was thinking about dinosaurs.
But I didn't ever see any comebacks. I played 5 or 6 matches. Never once was there a comeback.
That's tough.
It just
man.
One side just got stopped.
Which is really Mike's problem too.
Yeah,
it's weird. Like if you allow for comebacks, you almost kind of nerf your own game.
Yeah,
in a way. It's tough. That
it is.
I do not desire whatever the balancing. Is there a job title for that? Somebody that handles that? It's a developer.
Yeah.
He's one of the developers, or all the developers work on it.
Probably.
A group, yeah, for sure.
So what else have you guys played?
Did you play
Magic?
I did play Magic. I played Magic Duel Origins. I'm happy because I get to play Magic for free. Playing versus the AI is actually fun. I'm having a good time. It's not really that. It's not very challenging, but it's still fun because as you play, you unlock a story for each of the Planeswalkers. Planeswalkers is basically who you play as, and these are the 5 that the main ones that they've used throughout their lore.
Forever.
I mean, the Magic lore is fucking deep as shit. It's a 20, 30-year-old game.
Something
25-year-old
like
game. Yeah. There's so much lore. It's ridiculous. But these are the 5 main ones. And it's kind of cool to see their little backstory. I don't know if it would be interesting for somebody who's never played Magic. But anyway, the UI is...
The tutorials were cool. Like,
yeah.
It seemed like if I had played Magic before,
that
it would have would teach me it. And
it's definitely lowering the learning curve without dumbing down the game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so if you're playing a game and something you've never seen before pops up, it will take you into a different game where you have a perfect scenario to use that to your best. You need to win that turn. But you need to learn exactly. They did a really good job.
The mechanic. Yeah.
You have to use it perfectly in order to win. It's the only way to win. And then if you win that, you get a little bit of gold, which you can spend on packs, and then you go back to the actual game that you're in. So it's almost like when you're watching a movie and they go, you know, they cut away like Family Guy. They cut away to this thing. Oh, the last time I did ecstasy, and then they go.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that. It's cool. I like the way they did it. The UI is very clean. So they were trying to do this like Magic 2012, 2013,
yeah.
through the 14. I don't believe that this is in that.
It's set up very similar to how those other ones
were. Oh, were they?
Yeah.
So
what's
maybe,
this one called?
Origins.
Magic Duels.
Origins. Yeah, Duel or Duels. I forgot. I spelled it wrong, maybe.
Yeah. I think it's Duel, like sword fighting Duel.
Yeah,
Duel. But you could have more than one duel, right?
You can have duels?
Yeah.
Yes, you can. Yeah. No, if two people are having a duel, then you have duels. Or four people.
Yeah.
Yes.
Duels, yeah.
Yeah.
Four people had a duel last night.
Yeah.
Hey. Hey.
Anyways.
That's by the way, if you're trying to look into it, that sounded super gay. There was no gayness.
A little gayness.
There was plenty of ladies involved. Okay. Now, awkward. Wow.
Should we talk about Windows 10?
Let me finish up real quick.
Oh.
I enjoyed it. It's free. Download it.
It's on Steam, right?
This is a really good way to get into Magic. Really good way to get in.
This is Steam, right?
Yeah, it's on Steam. It's free. Just download it. Play it. Maybe you guys can tell me how it is. It's so hard. I have this weird perspective because I've been playing this game for 15 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I feel like Chad said, this is a good way to learn. I really do.
Mila and I both downloaded Windows 10. Nothing new to report on my end. I did the install where I didn't delete everything. It just upgraded it to 10.
I didn't see an option. There was an option to do a fresh?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. It was just... So, probably three episodes back, I was like, okay, you need to like set aside everything that's important, put it in a safe, and make sure it's fire retardant, and then you have to wipe your hard drive, and then you got to get the new... No, it's nothing like that. You actually just click probably five prompts.
Yeah.
It downloads. It tells. And, you know, a lot of the time you get these little prompts, and they tell you, sit back, relax. We got this. This is what we're doing on right now. And most of the time they're just really stupid. I know this is like a weird thing to bring up, but the text that it was telling me was actually pertinent to what was going on. And I felt like, oh, thanks for letting me know what you're doing.
Gotcha.
And so I don't feel like a jackass. It was like, okay, we're installing now. Your computer's going to restart several times. Don't worry about it. It said, don't worry about it. This is natural. And then so it went through its whole thing. And for the first time ever, the prompt sent meant, or they felt like, somebody was in the room talking to me, talking me through it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Not just that. You don't have to wipe all your shit. Although Bob and I both kind of talked about it. It's kind of nice to have a fresh install where you just wipe everything. There's a lot of skeletons in that closet.
Yeah.
And,
use a good cleaning.
Yeah, but you know, it's also nice to just sit back for maybe 45 minutes and the whole thing was done. And now I got Windows 10. Seems pretty cool. The only thing that I didn't like so far was the logging into the personal assistant, or just actually logging into the Windows 10 for itself.
That's the biggest complaint I've heard from a lot of people, is that they really try to muscle you into signing into your Microsoft account. Like, if you're going to use Cortana, you got to sign in. And that's kind of bullshit to have to, like, sign in or create an account just to use your operating system.
I
haven't gone that far.
Still have my Hotmail account, so I'm just over that one.
I had no problem with the actual signing in. Like, you just gave me a free, cool, awesome operating system. Well, who am I to say that I shouldn't be able to? That wasn't a problem. I retrieving my account, and the Windows kept refreshing on their own. They'd crash the Windows of, like, trying to get my... it was really bad. Like, I rolled away from my computer. I was like, I can't handle this right now. Let's go get some drinks. And then so we did. Just over and over and over, they were sending me an account code so that I could verify. But by the time that I got the verification code and went back to the thing, the window had closed and it would start all over from the beginning again. Oh, my God, it was bad.
No, that sucks. Yeah. If you have Windows,
problem sucks.
If you have Windows 8, get Windows 10, because Windows 8 is a piece of crap, and so that's where I'm at right now. So I have no complaints with Windows 10. When I did the install, nice. I went to the customize, turned off all the fucking collect data, I turned all that shit off, unselected everything, basically said, just give me the fucking operating system.
And DirectX 12?
Yeah, DirectX 12 is included in this, but you know they got to make games that use DirectX 12 first.
Right. Yeah.
The other nice thing is I can finally run my computer in its my TV and its native resolution for some reason. I'm at 1080p by 720 or whatever.
Oh, weird.
Yeah, and it looks great. So who knows what it was. But yeah, that's a nice little touch for sure. That's really been bothering me.
Yeah, that's actually a big deal.
Yeah,
I mean you're finally running at 1080p.
Yeah,
welcome to the
so 1910,
whatever year it is,
or 2010.
I got one more game to talk about.
Why is Subnautica on here?
Because I played it.
Oh, nice! Did you buy it?
Yeah. So in our Tom Joubert interview, Tom Joubert interview. He mentioned that Subnautica, he just signed on Subnautica to do some story work for them on that game. And so I wanted to give it a try. It's been getting a lot of positive reviews and all. It's still early access. It was $20 on Steam. I did not ask him for a free copy, which I probably should have. But I was a little skeptical going in because I'm not a huge underwater kind of guy. Yeah. And crafting survival, you know, has been done to death. But I couldn't stop playing this.
Wow, like, when was this?
This was Saturday, I think.
Sure, okay.
I played for a couple hours. I kept saying, okay, just a little bit more, and then I'm going to put it away. Yeah. And I did that 6 or 7 times. It's cool because it's underwater, but you still have oxygen. So it's like 10 to 20 feet down and stuff like that. So you kind of have to think about your oxygen. There's no hacking of trees, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, the only now thing, you're stabbing coral.
You can break coral and rocks and stuff. I was joking too. But it's just one hit. It's not like, it's more like you're collecting. It's not like you're chopping.
I mean, why cost a player time?
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
So I really like that. The crafting is cool. So you crash your ship crashes into this oceanic planet. So it's this huge ship that's right there on the map, and you're the only person to escape in the life pod. So you're in the life pod. The ship has crashed. Everybody's dead. Radiation's leaking out of it, but your escape pod has a fabrication unit there. So if you can get raw materials, you can fabricate stuff.
So coral, you turn into a pistol.
No, you take the coral and you turn it into silicone, okay. And then you can take the silicone and turn that into a circuit board or something like that.
Okay.
So you break down these pieces into their base elements.
So and then you're basically just looking for raw material.
Well,
and blueprints probably.
So I did this. I did the normal mode, which has oxygen. It's got your health bar, but then it also has food and water. So you're surviving. There's fish running around. You got to craft yourself a knife, and then you can start running around.
Fish don't run around, bro.
And I died several. Well, they swim around. You know what I meant. I died several times because there are some mean things out there, and they will fucking.
This is cool. I'm totally gonna play this off your account. I know it's gonna be later in the interview, but if you don't happen to be interested or whatever, I gotta put. Again, I got to reiterate on the power of the internet. Not only did we reach out to him and he came on and had an interview with us, but the way he gets jobs is he finds a game that he likes and emails them after he's been playing it, and they hire him for a writing position. Like, he was playing Subnautica. Subnautica didn't have a story.
Yeah.
He really liked the game. The passion's already built in.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And so you know that you're going to get a good product or a lot of quality stuff from him because he's already into it. He's already subscribed.
Yeah.
So it's just amazing. I love the internet. I love the power of it and more power to it. If you have something you're really into, fucking just send an email. You'd be surprised what could happen.
Yeah. The point of Subnautica, though, is to you eventually create these like crafts and you can make submarines and everything like that. I haven't gotten that far yet. I was working on my personal craft that I'm trying to create. But all in all, I was having a blast. I want you guys to play it if you got a chance and check it out. obviously, now that Tom Joubert's on it, there's going to be a lot more story going on that they're going to start working on and everything like that. So I'm excited to see where this is going to head. And like I said, I don't like underwater stuff, and I'm kind of over the crappy survival, and I still had a blast playing this game. So
cool. I think I've watched some Let's Plays of this video. You can build like these giant underwater bases, right?
Yeah, you got these individual components and all, and you can kind of piece them together.
Some people have spent a lot of time putting together some of those. If you look on YouTube, there's some giant underwater cities.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that's the highlights from this week. What do we got in the way of listener questions?
Yeah, what do we got?
So Team Tom brought up that maybe we should do a weekly rundown of next week's releases, because it would be pertinent to when the actual podcast comes out. We're usually a day or two behind, and so that would be pretty nice.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
This week I think we're running a little long, so we will patch that in. Like last week, we were only at 53 minutes, so it would have been really nice last week. Yeah. So thank you for contributing, Team Tom. It's weird calling somebody a team. And then Bobby, somebody said that you have like 8 hours on Depth Hunter. Is that just hunting cards?
Yeah, I probably left that running while I was card farming. Although I will say Depth Hunter 2, I think is the one that they're referring to, does look interesting. It looks like a shitty version of Subnautica, actually. I think you hunt fish in that game. I don't know.
Depth Hunter 2 sounds like one of those games that they, like, a not real game. It's like kind of a generic
for sure
game.
Something sounds you like just throw out. Like an Asylum movie, like Sharknado or some, like.
Or maybe it's one of those games that you just come up and create on Dev Tycoon, Game Dev Tycoon.
Yeah, exactly. Or
whatever. But yeah. Let's get into some news.
Sure. So, Witch 3 has full mod support now. They have a modding kit. Apparently, it's not very robust, but modders are notorious for doing amazing things with a little bit. Most of the time, they mod games that don't even have mod tools. So, you give them a little bit, they can do a lot with it. This game already has so much fucking content that it's amazing that you can get that for $50. It should be a subscription. That's how much content there is in this game. And now there's going to be even more. It's crazy. So kudos to them. I'll just keep going down.
Yeah.
Unless you guys have something. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool.
Star Wars Battlefront is no single player campaign. I am 100% cool with this.
Yeah.
I imagine you guys are too. We've talked about this in the past.
Yeah. What was this an issue on too? Not really an issue.
Battlefields.
Used to have the single player.
No, there was a game recently where they were like, there's not going to be a multiplayer, or there's not going to be a single player campaign. Some recent game, and some people were a little bent out of shape about it.
Not Star Wars Battlefront?
No, this was like months ago. And we were all like, no, that sounds like a great idea. Don't convolute it.
Yeah.
God, what was that game?
Doesn't matter. The what we came up with then, and I think what still applies now, is what we want is a multiplayer experience. Why muddle things?
No, what I want...
I want 100% on the multiplayer.
I want a pure...
All your resources.
I want a pure experience. If the game is supposed to be a single player, don't tack on multiplayer. If the game is supposed to be multiplayer, don't tack on single player.
You're talking about millions of dollars
to
do that single player thing.
Yeah.
Sweet. It would be really cool to have maybe a story that goes into the actual lore. But who cares?
Make a single player game if you want to do a single player game.
Yeah.
Star Wars Battlefront is a multiplayer game. Stick to the multiplayer. Yeah. I agree.
Divinity's Original Sin 2 is going to be hitting Kickstarter this month. I think the 28th. This is going to be the first thing, guaranteed, first thing that I'm going to back on Kickstarter.
Nice.
I'm all in. Downside is, they crushed it on the first one. It was a runaway success for what they expected. They were originally a Kickstarter game.
Mm-hmm.
They made way, way more money than they expected, because they made an amazing game with full... Fuck. We love this game over here at DL Gaming. And they don't really need this. This is kind of like, let's play it safe so we don't invest the money. So, it seems like a betrayal, maybe.
Why?
The way I look at it. Like, take a risk on us, guys, and we're going to maybe deliver this amazing thing. we delivered this amazing thing. We gained way more money than we actually expected.
Do you think they gained way more money?
Yeah, it was a commercial, way commercial success. First of all, they doubled what they wanted, almost doubled from a Kickstarter. And then they sold so many copies. Then they got Game of the Year from a couple of publications. And so they were runaway success.
Including ours? Did we get it?
No, it was a... like a
it was in the top three.
Yeah, it was in the top three, yeah, for sure. It's an amazing game. So this is basically saying we want to do this, but we don't want to incur the risk. Why not do it the way that we originally did it? I don't know. Do you guys see it? I see it negatively. Maybe not a betrayal. Maybe that's a strong...
No.
You say it's cool?
I mean, it's not like they're EA or Ubisoft or something like that. If EA is doing Kickstarters, then maybe I'll be like, what the fuck, guys? You guys have enough money.
Right,
just,
right.
Just do it. But these guys...
They're still like...
They've had one hit. Yeah. You know, like...
Yeah.
And so, let them do their Kickstarter. They'll do well. They'll deliver on it like they did last time, I hope. And then, you know...
Keep going. When it comes to a situation like this, you just look at the last thing they did. You know, they really did deliver on Divinity Original Sin. And, you know, on that merit alone, I'd support them with this Kickstarter.
For sure. Cool. And going into it, I just said it's bullshit and then, oh, I'm totally going to back it. I'm going to back it. And then for those who have never Kickstarted anything, I will walk you guys through the process. I'm going to get maybe... I'm gonna give them enough money where I get the game for free or whatever. Maybe I'll get early access and we'll just walk through the whole experience with you guys. It'll be just like a running thing, theme on the podcast.
Cool.
Yeah. I can't even. Okay. So this might say some stuff. So the American Psychological Association, the APA, affirms that there is a link between violent video games and aggressive behavior. They didn't go so far. They said that the information wasn't strong enough to say that it actually results in crimes, but they can say with, you know, very like the science is sound.
I haven't read this article, but are they saying there's a cause and effect here? Like violent video games?
They're saying that one causes the other, and not that aggressive people. Aggressive people don't tend to play. That's not what they're trying to. And so, and the other thing that I thought that was pretty important, I read the whole article. The other point was less sensitivity to aggressive actions. So somebody that plays violent video games might not react naturally to a very violent thing. But ultimately what this all means was, you know, this is like a 8 or 9 year study. There's some task force that they, and they're going to talk to the ESRB, and the ESRB is going to change some stuff now, and global ratings are going to change as well. And I don't know what to say. Obviously, this is not a good sign for the game. Video games, nothing's going to happen. It's not going to affect the market. It's not even, but I really don't hope. I really hope it doesn't happen. What happened to movies where rated R movies don't come out anymore because there's this global appeal now to, you know, get all the, you know, everything's PG-13 just because that's where the money's at.
Yeah.
I just really hope that games don't exclude violence so that they won't get that mark from the SIB. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because violence can be fun. But generally, I just want to have, like, look at Rocket League. Can anything be more innocuous?
Yeah, I wouldn't consider that violent at all, would you?
No. I'm saying that...
You can't blow up other cars.
And there is a driver in that car. And that driver...
I don't know if there is a driver in that other car.
I thought they were, like, remote-controlled. Well...
Sure, I don't know.
All right, what else we got?
Hey, did you guys pick up that expansion pack for $4?
I have not yet.
No. Hey, I'm not too big on the skins, although I really do like the new car models. Is that what expansion out?
Yeah, it's out.
Yeah, it's $4 to get two new types of cars.
And two maps?
You get the maps anyway, I think. We went over this like two
more podcasts. More speculation ago.
No, we explained it like, I think, 2 weeks ago.
We brought it up, but we didn't know that.
Maybe it was last week.
I think you have to pay to play on those maps. I'm pretty sure.
No, but
they don't want to split their
Yeah, no, they specifically like said, I'm kind of remembering it now, but they said they're giving away free content, and then they are having paid content as well. And I'm pretty sure the paid content was just the two cars, the hot rod.
Was that on drugs? Because I don't remember any of this conversation.
Probably.
All right, cool.
High likelihood.
I don't know if this is news, but, you know, I don't know how some people, they do data mining, whatever. But Hearthstone's making $20 million a month.
I feel like, that wouldn't surprise me, but I feel like sometimes people just throw this shit out there and people start repeating it. $20 million. All right, that sounds
right. They come from companies that do this for...
Companies.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I...
Don't be rude, Bobby.
I'm just asking you to cite sources.
I recently threw $50 at Hearthstone. Their new expansion's coming out. Grand Tournament.
You are notorious for spending money before the thing happens.
It's true.
It's kind of like what I brought up last week where the guy brought the black silken sash right before the expansion Kunark came out in EverQuest. You don't know. The values can change. You know what I mean?
So
yeah, like, but in a situation like this, if he spent $50 and it ended up to be a bomb, then everybody would be pissed. People would get their money back. Like, that's a safer bet than buying something from content from a user. You know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're saying. What is he saying?
He's saying that it's a guarantee because Blizzard's going to do it, so.
Yeah. If you buy something from Blizzard, that's one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but
why not wait till the expansion comes out, buy the new cards that are going to be...
That's what I'm saying. The Grand Tournament, which is their next expansion, is doing a pre-order for $50. You get 50 packs and a card and a back. But that's a dollar a pack.
I don't even play, and that sounds great.
Yeah,
a dollar a pack is amazing.
A dollar a pack. So I threw the $50 in. It's only good, like, once the actual expansion comes out, you can't get this pack, but so it's for pre-orders only.
There's not that many cards.
There's 100-some cards, 137 or something.
Okay,
like that.
I thought it was way less.
No, it's a full...
Is there going to be single-player content?
One. No, this is... They're kind of doing back and forth on this because the mechs and goblins were just straight packs, and then BlackRock.
Yeah, they go back and forth. Yeah.
BlackRock Depths was.
Which I like.
Me too.
Yeah, go back and forth. If you never played a trading card game ever, this is probably where you want to jump in.
We also talked about Magic this podcast.
Yeah, but this is the easiest. This is the easiest.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Anybody can play this. So, like we said, children.
On any device,
too. On any device, yeah. It is solid as fuck. I mean, you can. The arena is amazing.
Yeah.
I think the arena is.
I
didn't bring that up. Magic Duels Origins is basically Magic trying to copy Hearthstone, and they get to. They get to because they were the original.
Yeah.
So, more power to them on that one.
Cool.
So we're going to wind this bitch down?
Yeah.
Yes,
Bobby,
you got
anything else?
Nope.
Chad?
So, yeah, just a general reminder, we got the interview coming up right after this. Take a listen to it. Good stuff. And we're giving away Steam cards, $20 Steam cards for the next 2 weeks. So make sure you get your review in there.
Go write a goddamn review. $20.
And if you already did, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. So speaking for Chad... Speaking for Bobby's Johnny Depp bangs.
Yep.
And speaking for Emilio, titties.
Welcome to another DL Gaming Podcast interview. We're here with Tom Joubert. And Chad is here. Make sure to step all over everybody's talking.
Hey, what up, guys?
Welcome, Tom.
Hello, guys. Good to be here.
I need to let you know that usually I'm drunk for these things, but it's only 9 in the morning, so I'm only half drunk.
Yeah. And I'm not drunk at all, so it'll work out for sure. So, Tom is actually the writer that has been on such games as The Swapper, which we loved, Talos Principle, again, another game we loved, Faster Than Light, another game we loved. Just to jump in there, can you tell us a little bit like how you got into gaming specifically? A lot of writers, you know, go into the just writing novels, but it seems that you went specifically for games. Could you tell a little bit about how you got into that field?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up during the sort of NES generation, basically. My earliest memories are things like Duck Hunt and then things like Street Fighter 2 at the arcades and things like that. So, you know, it was really, you know, that was sort of our punk music, right? It was something, it was our hobby that our parents didn't understand. And
our passion, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I always had this passion for writing and for creative stuff in general. And so kind of games just presented a natural opportunity for me, really. It seemed like the most exciting thing. It seemed like the place where there was most good work still to be done. I mean, Christ, yeah. I don't know if I'd set out at the start of my career to be a novelist, I don't know if I would have had the success that I've had. You know, there's just so much cool stuff that no one's done yet in games. It's a very attractive place to be.
That's for one of my biggest regrets. Like, I every time somebody talks about how they got into it, I don't know why I was just happy just to enjoy and not to get involved. You know what I mean? Like, I was just like, oh, this is an amazing thing. I love video games so much. And I never had the thought, oh, let me get involved into it until I was a grown-ass man.
So did you kind of evolve into the, you know, writing and developing of a project, or did you come in specifically for that? I'm just kind of curious, because being in the video game industry myself, I can see the challenges on actually, did you have ideas and you brought it up and they ran with it? How exactly did the first one go?
So the first one was Penumbra Overture. And that was basically, you know, two or three guys, students in their bedrooms, turning out something really pretty ambitious for such a small team at the time. And I sent them an email saying, I think you've got something really cool, because they put out their tech demo for the game. And I said, it's really cool, but I think you could do more with the writing. And I did a little rewrite of their intro as a sort of sample to show them what more I could do with it, and said, If you wanna develop this some further, let me know. And they sent me an email back saying we've literally just signed to turn this thing into a full game, and yeah, provided you're prepared to work for free up front, you're signed.
The work for free up front, always a good one.
Do it for free until you get paid for it. Pretty much is that the way you have to do it, right?
Yeah, that was the way that one worked, and yeah, you know, everyone was not getting paid up front, and you know, it went really well. We were very lucky, because it was successful enough to spawn a couple of follow-ups, and that kind of got me over the hump in that first sort of 2 or 3 year period in my career. It meant that I had some sort of relatively steady work, and that I had actually more than one game to my name before I had to then go and start shopping myself around for new stuff.
Oh, that's nice. That's nice. And then after that, did you go slide right into Fast and Light?
No, there was a long gap between those two, because Penumbra was, I think I started on that in 2006.
Gotcha.
Released 2007, the first one. I think the last one released late 2008, maybe 2009, something like that. Gotcha. And then, what was FTL? Like 2 years ago, more than that.
Was it?
I don't know. Original one
seems
like
2 years ago, something like that, maybe.
So in between, I did I came out of Penumbra and I wanted to do something with a bigger budget, basically. You know, gotcha. I kind of proven that I could pull it off on Penumbra, and I wanted to convert that. At the time, I was looking for a salaried position somewhere in house, because kind of that was where all of the games that I'd grown up playing for their story, they came from sort of relatively large studios. You know, it was things like Thief or the Western RPGs. And, you know, that was just kind of naturally where I saw myself heading. And I never, you know, no one ever offered me one of those jobs during that period. So I did a few freelance jobs on things like Driver San Francisco. I did Binary Domain. And I did a whole load of AAA stuff that got canned. I assume that certainly kept me fed for 2 or 3 years in between that and FTL, even if it never saw the light of day.
And gotcha. I kind of assumed that the writing for Driver at San Francisco was he gets in his car, he gets out of his car, a lot of stuff happens in between. Or was there actually some story to that?
Yeah, so the crazy USP in San Francisco is that he's actually in a coma dream, and thus he's able to transfer his mind between different bodies and then take over other drivers.
So, and then,
That's much better than the story I would have came up with.
So in that particular case, the mechanic has already been established, and you're working your game, your story around the established gameplay. Is that how that one is going?
Yeah, so that one was actually, I was part of a writing team brought on to do a particular section of the dialogue. So I wasn't a narrative designer on that one, whereas I was on Penumbra and, you know, other things like that. So we were just doing the in-car dialogue, which is like the incidental stuff when you take over some driver and start driving on the sidewalk and taking these big jumps and things. So there's a passenger in the car, they have all of this dynamic dialogue, which is quite funny and silly and a bit dark.
That's awesome. But generally speaking, at this point, do you come on early in a project before all the gameplay is flushed out? When do you generally come onto the project, and how does it work for you when you get on there?
It really does vary according to the project, even to this day, but, you know, generally, ideally, sooner is better.
Gotcha.
So on Subnautica, for instance, you know, it's public knowledge that it's been out there in early access for ages, and I was a player of the game before I signed on to it. So obviously there's been a load of work done on that already. Usually there's been very little story work done.
Gotcha.
So there's usually like some guidelines and places that says, you know, this is the sort of game we're making, this is what the world is kind of going to look like, this is the setting, but generally there's not too much of a hard plot in place, or if there is, we kind of work it until it's in better shape. I mean, for instance, on Subnautica, the first jobs that I'm doing really are working out a proper sort of 5-page story overview and working out the actual mechanics of how we're going to tell this story, if there's going to be anything kind of ambitious in that. And then it's really just a process of working with the team leads to make sure that everyone's on the same page.
Now, the interesting part about Subnautica is it, you know, going in, it doesn't have much of a story. And I love this quote from you. You said that plot is gameplay's bitch. So I thought that was really interesting, because in games that are like that, where you have the, I think the story tells itself in that you're surviving in an alien world. So the, you know, it's the story tells itself. So you're just going to do kind of like a background of it, or your story going into it. Is that, or maybe there's going to be markers while you play that trigger more of the actual story?
Well, you know, I don't want to give too much of the game away, but there's obviously going to be some locations and some things to see and discover that are going to tell you a bit more about this world. And obviously your survival is going to be tied into your understanding of the world.
Gotcha. I think it's so great, you know, that you were a fan first. You were a fan first, and then you said, "Hey, I wanna get involved with this." That's amazing.
Basically, some of my most successful projects have been that kind of deal. Because, like I said, during that period after Penumbra, I was getting a bunch of work, but it was, people approaching. Some of it was through my agent and things like that, and it wasn't very bespoke. It was kind of just, you know, a lot of it was work for hire stuff.
Right.
And coming on to Subnautica is great because I had that passion already, and I did the same thing on FTL. Actually, I dropped the guys an email and I said I loved the demo, and if I could do anything, let me know.
That's why the internet's great. I found out the things that you had been talking about, and I said, hey, we should talk to that guy. I love all those games.
Yeah, exactly.
And then here we are, less than a week later, probably, from the last recording. It's excellent.
Yeah.
So you were playing Subnautica relatively recently. So obviously you're a gamer yourself. What sort of games do you like to play, and what's sort of your passion, and maybe what is your favorite game that you've played?
I go through stages.
Like we all do.
I was very into the big RPGs, like I said, the Planescape Torments and the Baldur's Gates and things like that.
Nice.
These days, they're just too vast for me.
We say the same thing.
Yeah, all these recent retro RPGs and such, I give them a go, and then I just think, no, it's just too big.
Exactly. Have you tried the Shadowrun? Yeah. The Shadowrun series?
Yeah, I think I actually beat the first of those new ones, because it was just pretty like short.
Yeah, the expansion's coming out, or the expansion came out, and you're just not quite finding the time to get in there. Gotcha.
So we're kind of hopping all over the place here, so we'll go back to Talos Principle. So the DLC is about to come out, or just
released? It just came out, I believe.
Gotcha.
Called Road to Gehenna, correct?
That's right.
And the reason we were even on the phone here is because last week, Chad could not shut up about the Talos Principle. He loved the overarching story. It seems like in your games, there is an overarching theme about consciousness. And because I see that in The Swapper, and I see it in Talos Principle, and even a little bit, now that you said it, in Driver, about moving around the trick. So is this something that maybe... It's one of the biggest questions in humanity, right? What is consciousness? So is that that big question you'd like to put into your games? Is that what I'm seeing?
So I suppose that the way I would look at it, I would say consciousness is kind of... It's not in itself my core preoccupation. I would happily make a game that doesn't have anything to do with that, but it is a necessary step on the way to my core preoccupation, which is the question of how people should live, right? More or less. Yeah, the age-old philosophical question of what is the point of it all? How do we get by? How do we live with one another? That sort of stuff. And in order to answer all of those questions, you've first got to have a theory about the mind and about what we are. And you know, I'm very much a realist, a humanist, a materialist on this stuff. You know, I kind of embrace the ideas that we are just a bag of bones and chemicals. And, you know, we shouldn't take our position in the world as anything particularly special, except insofar as we alone, as far as we know, have this incredible capacity to shape the world for better or for ill. If you start confusing what consciousness is, if you start talking about something that goes beyond the realm of sort of reasonable science, then you also start confusing those bigger, more important questions.
Gotcha.
Well, we got heavy real quick.
Yeah,
that escalated quickly. Well put, though.
It seems most of your games focus on future. Is that a passion for you, the science fiction aspect of it, or is it just the way the cookie is kind of crumbled with your career?
No, it's definitely a fascination of mine. I mean, you know, it's something where, you know, as a kid, you love that stuff just for the fantasticness of it, you know, and then you grow up and you start reading different sci-fi, or you read the same sci-fi, but you read it in a new way, and you actually start seeing that it has a lot to say about us. I like it because it gives me, you know, it gives me freedom to be silly and to do things in different ways. It's a really good fit for video games as well. Yeah. That doesn't happen. But yeah, most excitingly, it gives you this quite accessible way to talk about contemporary issues, you know, by exaggerating them and extrapolating them forward. It gives you that distance, you know. It's the Animal Farm principle, right? You can talk about issues easier if you're one step removed from the reality.
That makes sense. So as it seems like an avid reader as well, give our audience a book that you is your favorite or that you would highly recommend. Give me something that I can pick up and read that says Tom Joubert says this one's good.
Fiction or nonfiction?
Well, the reason I bring it up is Emilio goes by the handle Ender's Logic because of Ender's Game. That's one of his like favorite series and all. I was just wondering if you had a series that kind of drove you to science fiction or kind of made you say like this is what I want to be writing about.
Well, you know, if the question is what drove me to science fiction, it's undoubtedly the Discworld,
gotcha.
The Hitchhikers series. But those are not particularly special recommendations because everyone already knows those, right?
Terry Pratchett, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, I like those.
But to give you something else, I'm just looking at my bookshelf now, and one of my all-time favorites is Slaughterhouse-Five by Kurt Vonnegut. That's a great sci-fi.
I think I read that in one of my grade schools, high school or something.
Yeah, it is. I first encountered it on a reading list, and it's one of those few ones on a school reading list that I actually took away with me.
Gotcha.
FTL is kind of like your choose your own adventure book. Like there's so many arcing different ways that you could go. How do you write a story for something that has so many different ways that you can go? And by the way, it was listed in the top 10 PC games of all time, so that's a nice feather in your cap.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, like I said before, it was a wonderful game long before I was involved with it, and I very much followed the lead of Justin and Matt on the way that I was writing things. I mean, the great benefit with that stuff is that so much of the perceived flexibility and freedom in the game is actually in the gameplay systems mm-hmm. rather than the story itself. You know, the story, the branching is incredibly simple. And you know, sometimes the way that the events branch out will actually completely screw up your playthrough or make
exactly.
make it super easy and you know, that's kind of part of the game. So I think players do a lot of that work in their heads. You know, they read a little snippet of text or they decide to blow up a weapons cache instead of salvaging it, and then that fight, whatever happens next, is all kind of just a little bit more contextualized, and they build the story themselves.
Hmm. Interesting. Very cool. Yeah. You got anything else, Chad?
Are we going to bring up the three questions?
It's only one anymore, and it's the favorite game of all time. But I think he's going to go with Torment. Planescape Torment?
Yeah, I do. I am honor bound to always answer Torment to that question.
Okay.
I wonder what I've thoroughly enjoyed Invisible Ink recently. The game.
Yeah.
I
played that also. That's that stealth turn based one, right?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of stealth stuff.
You and Emilio are opposites then.
Yeah.
He tries to brute force everything.
Yep. My girlfriends hate it.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I think we got it good right now. What do you think, Emilio?
Yeah, Tom, very well spoken. Thank you very much for your time.
Before we go, just wanted to mention a couple things. So Subnautica is his next project out. Check it out. It's on Early Access on Steam right now. Also, Road to Gehenna, the Talos Principle expansion, is out now also on Steam. Also, there's going to be a Talos Collector's Edition or some sort of complete edition that's coming out on PlayStation. So if you've got a PlayStation, check it out. He also has a blog, which I've read a couple of his articles, and it's very well done. It's called Plot is Gameplay's Bitch. So if you are interested in learning more about Tom, please check out his blog.
And what's your Twitter handle, Tom?
At Tom Joubert.
Okay.
Easy.
Awesome.
At Tom
Perfect.
Joubert. With a T.
Yeah.
As we learned.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time, Tom. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks very much,
Tom.
Guys.
Bye-bye.
Cool. Cheers.